Tonight was the fallout from Sunday's AEW Revolution pay-per-view. We had three championship matches with a new TNT champion being crowned in the main event. You saw it at the end of the show tonight, Sammy Guevara losing his TNT championship to one Scorpio Sky. Finally, the men of the year won something. We've been seeing them sitting in the rafters with Dan Lambert, watching other people's matches. They haven't really done much of anything. Tonight, they finally did something. And we also, at the very end of the show tonight, we saw Paige Van Zandt signing her AEW contract on Ty Conti's dead body at the end of the show. There was a lot that happened on the show tonight, but I have to say, one of the key themes about tonight's show was the theme of divorce, breakups, splits. This would have been a good night for Ric Flair to make his AEW debut. We had the end of the Inner Circle as we know it. Chris Jericho and Jake Hager still together, but now they've taken on some new blood. They have formed a new group. The Inner Circle is no more. We also had the end of the alliance between FTR and Tully Blanchard in a very quick blink if you missed it backstage segment. Kind of came out of nowhere. No real explanation for it, but FTR fires Tully Blanchard, so they are no longer together. Wardlow made it very clear in his promo tonight that he and MJF are done. He is through with MJF, even though he is still technically under contract to MJF. And Matt Hardy, I've been calling it for months, even before these Jeff Hardy rumors really seemed to become a reality, that Matt Hardy was going to be excommunicated from his own group. There was going to be a hostile takeover by Andrade, and that's what we got tonight. The AHFO is no more. I guess now it's just the AFO. Which is kind of close to the band who used to sing CM Punk's old theme song. That was AFI. This is AFO. Who knows if they'll take on a different name or not. But that wasn't even the biggest news coming out of that segment. Matt Hardy kicked out of his group. Sting, Darby Allin, they come out to try to make the save. The numbers game, it's too much. The baby faces have been overwhelmed when all of a sudden, what do we hear? What do we see? But the return of this man on your screen, it is official. You know, it's never official until Tony Khan puts the graphic up. And there it is right there. The worst kept secret in pro wrestling, Jeff Hardy is All Elite. Jeff Hardy coming to the aid of his brother and aligning with Matt Hardy, reuniting the Hardy Boys. There was a lot going on this show tonight. A very newsworthy show. On the whole, a very fun episode of Dynamite. I can't really, as I think back to this show, there's no one single match that really stands out to me, but there were so many things going on, as is the case with this show. It moves so quickly, it can be hard to digest everything. But, you know, the promos that we've seen over the last several weeks have largely been carried on this show by two men, CM Punk and MJF. Neither man was on the show tonight, which is good. That's the way it should be. After the violent match they had at the pay-per-view on Sunday, give them a week off. There was no need for either of them to be on the show tonight. So with them missing, though, as great as their promo work has been, we had two men take their place as far as picking up the slack on the promo side, that being Eddie Kingston. I know this is going to be a real surprise to all of you that Eddie Kingston is pretty good on the mic. And William Regal. We got William Regal in the ring tonight cutting a pretty long promo, really, explaining why he came to AEW and why he's here now with Jon Moxley and Bryan Danielson, who are officially a tag team. That was very cool to see. They don't have a team name officially. I keep going back to this Fight Club name that I threw out there the other day. Whatever, they're going to have to come up with a team name at some point. But we got some really good promo work from those two on this show. So let's run through the entire thing. And that's, by the way, not to take anything away from Wardlow. Because tonight we got the first official Wardlow promo here on Dynamite. The first time Wardlow has had a chance to really stand on his own in the ring with a microphone and cut a promo. And I thought he did a great job. This is your AEW Dynamite. Oh, look at that. Look at that. Rodimus Prime dropping $25 early in the stream, but it's the Hardy Monster. Never a more appropriate Super Chat than right now. Thank you for the Hardy Monster Super Chat. This is your AEW Dynamite review for March 9th, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster, as you can see. And there's a Jeff. Look at this. Look at all these Jeff Hardy Super Chats. My God, that is the creepy Jeff Hardy. Always creeps me out. As you can tell, Super Chats are open. I'm going to be reading all of your messages. And I saw some pretty interesting ones in there as far as some ideas you guys are throwing out there. So we're going to go through all those a little bit later on in the stream. Let's see if we can get those likes up. Let's see how high up we can go. How high can we get? I know some of you in this chat. I have gotten to know some of you, and I know you guys can get pretty high. So let's get those likes up a little bit, shall we? But we go back to Chris Jericho, a man I mentioned a little bit earlier on, just a few moments ago. Chris Jericho opened the show tonight to address the man who beat him on Sunday at Revolution. That, of course, being one Eddie Kingston. And Jericho, I must say, you know, Jericho's out there tonight, got the hair down and everything, and looking 10 years younger. You know, I complimented him the other night during the review because he's been looking rough over the last several months. Jericho's been looking, you know, he lives that rock star lifestyle. He's been looking like some of these rock stars tend to look when they're on the road for a long time and they're, you know, they're having a lot of late nights, drinking every night, partying every night. Jericho is starting to look it. So whatever he's doing, it's a noticeable change in his appearance here on this show. But Jericho came out here and he gave props to Eddie Kingston for submitting him in the stretch plum at Revolution, said that, look, I didn't live up to my word. Jericho said, you know, coming into that event on Sunday, that if Eddie Kingston beat him, he would put his hand out and shake the man's hand and pay him the respect that he deserves. And Jericho, of course, did not shake his hand and he felt bad about that. So he called Eddie Kingston out to the ring. Kingston came out and he said, you know, I wanted to spend my Friday night going out and drinking and, you know, forgetting his problems. Who among us has not had nights like that ourselves? In this promo, which, you know, it was trying to come off as this heartfelt promo, you can kind of tell when it's going down that road. Every time he would speak, there were some morons in the crowd doing the what chant, which is, you know, the bane of my existence. It's Steve Austin's single worst contribution to the wrestling business are those what chants. Would have been one thing if it was sort of contained to him, you know, that's his thing, but it just sort of spread like a virus. And unfortunately, it's still, how many years has it been? 22? No, 21. 21 years later, this fucking thing is still just permeating every wrestling show, every single week. So this guy is out there trying to cut this heartfelt promo. And it's not a majority of the crowd, but he's being whatted. And it bothers him. And he pauses in the middle of the promo and he asks the people to show some respect. And then he goes, you know, my man, Steve Austin ain't here. Relax. You know, Steve Austin's going to be coming back at WrestleMania for an appearance. I don't know. I doubt he makes any television appearances between now and then. I mean, if he's only coming back for a talk show segment, then why the hell would he come back on TV? To do what? Talk? You don't want to give that away. So we might not see him on TV. But, you know, whenever Austin comes back, so too do the what chance. So unfortunately, it's just something we're going to have to deal with for the next few weeks. So it worked, though. You know, Eddie said what he said, and that was the end of the what chance here. I mean, it wasn't Undertaker asking, you know, those idiots to say what if they sleep with their sister, but it was effective. It got the job done. So Kingston mentioned that he had four people come up to him, I guess at the pay-per-view. Had four people come up to him and tell him about how his Players Tribune article, how it saved their lives. And maybe this wasn't all at the pay-per-view, but he had these people come up to him and tell him how they were impacted by that article that he wrote, that Players Tribune essay, really. And so he went back to his hotel room and he cried. And there was no way, he knew at that point, there was no way that he was going to miss this pay-per-view on Sunday. And he hopes that with his victory, he did those people proud. So he said the handshake that he had asked for coming into that match, when he said, if I beat you, you got to shake my hand. You know, the handshake, or maybe it was, who is it? Was it Eddie or Jericho was the first person to mention the handshake? That's the one thing I couldn't remember. If it was something Eddie brought up first, or was Jericho the one who said, if you beat me, I'll shake your hand. Whatever the case. Eddie said that the handshake wasn't really for him. It was more for Jericho. And he started talking, he's psychoanalyzing Jericho now. And he talks about how Jericho is missing something inside his chest, and what is it that he's missing that he wouldn't live up to his word? And he goes, what do I have to do to drag out the man that I used to look up to? The man who used to compete in the Super J Cup once upon a time and was in the ring with legends like Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko. He goes, in his book, Jericho is still number one, but does that fill the hole in his chest that stops him from paying respect to young guys like Eddie? And I laughed at this part because, now, maybe he meant to say younger guys, because he is younger than Jericho is, but the idea that Eddie Kingston would refer to himself as a young guy, when you consider all of the young talent they have in this company, that made me laugh. That Eddie Kingston is out here talking about young guys, like 40-year-old Eddie Kingston. Jericho said, Eddie Kingston, I respect you, and I thank you for giving me one of the best matches of my career. It really was one of the best matches that Jericho has had since coming to AEW. If you had to make a top five or a top three of Jericho's best matches since coming into the company, this match probably cracks the top three. I would have to think it's pretty high up there on the list. And he thanked Eddie for giving that to him. He says, please shake my hand. And Jericho puts his hand out. Eddie shakes his hand, everybody cheers, until Daniel Garcia and 2.0. I thought we were done with this. I thought we were done with Jericho and Garcia and 2.0, but oh no, there was a swerve coming. So they come down to the ring, and they start attacking both guys. But first thing I noticed is that Jericho, he's laying in the corner. They're putting the boots and beating the crap out of Eddie. They're not really doing the same to Jericho. One of them's got a knee, I think it was Parker's, got a knee in Jericho's throat. That right there told me, wait a minute, they're holding back on Jericho. And that was sort of a little tell there as far as what was about to happen. So Santana and Ortiz run down to make the save. They have baseball bats. Ortiz handed a baseball bat to Jericho. Santana held Garcia. And Jericho instead hits Santana with the baseball bat. And he knocks him down, and Lee and Parker joined Jericho in beating down Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. So it was all a setup. The whole damn thing. The whole thing was a swerve. Here comes Jake Hager. And he's got this confused, upset look on his face as he races down to the ring. He gets inside, and then part two of the swerve comes. Because instead of going at Jericho, he goes right past Jericho. And he joins in the attack on the babyfaces. So Jericho and Hager are still together, which for Hager is the best possible outcome, because without him being attached to Jericho, what the hell does Jake Hager do in AEW? Jake Hager becomes Brian Cage, where he basically vanishes and we never see him. So for Jake Hager's career, the best thing for him would be to just kind of follow Jericho wherever he goes. So it's not a surprise that the best idea they could come up with for him is to keep him and Jericho together. So they're all beating on the baby faces, and there was a scary moment in here where Hager had Kingston out on the apron, and there was a table set up on the outside, and he was going to powerbomb Eddie Kingston through the table. Now, when he picked him up at first, he almost lost him. The other ones kind of helped. Okay, they got Eddie up, and he gave Eddie a powerbomb, a pretty stiff-looking powerbomb down through the table below, and it reminded me of the same exact bump that Ricky Starks took in the ladder match on Sunday. On that ladder bridge, where Starks got his hands behind his head, but he got folded up, back of his head first on the ladder bridge. Eddie took a very similar bump here. Didn't look like a lot of fun going through the table. Jericho and Hager removed their inner circle vests at that point. And so we have a new Inner Circle. We basically have a new Inner Circle. Jericho, though, referred to this group, he referred to this faction as the Jericho Appreciation Society, which is a terrible name. And shout out to Roger, by the way, Roger Pendlin. He's been a channel member for a while. Actually, I think he may have just upgraded to legend status. So shout out to Roger. Is that Roger in the chat just now? Wow. Episode 747. This weekend coming up, he says, will be his 600th episode straight of the podcast. That's incredible. And his birthday was Monday. Look at this. Holy shit. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Roger. I appreciate the support. The Jericho Appreciation Society, I don't appreciate that very much. That's a horrible name. That is a terrible name. Now, I guess it fits with the idea that Jericho, you know, heel Jericho thinks very highly of himself. So maybe he was going for, I hope he was intentionally going for a terrible name. Because that's a pretty god-awful name for a group. Really what they've done here is they have simply swapped out Santana and Ortiz and Sammy Guevara, I assume, for Daniel Garcia and 2.0. It's like an even, well, not exactly even, but, you know, basically just swap one out for the other. And just like that, voila, we have a new heel version of the Inner Circle. Inner Circle 2.0, literally, they have a tag team now in the group called 2.0. So there's your play on words. It's Inner Circle 2.0. They could literally call this Inner Circle 2.0 and it would actually make sense. And now I'm going to be very upset if they don't do that. As unoriginal as that sounds, it actually kind of works with Lee and Parker being part of this group. Look, it was a little weird that Sammy didn't come out. They were kind of telling a story on commentary. Where does Sammy Guevara's allegiance lie? When he came out for the main event later in the show, he was wearing a vest, but it wasn't an Inner Circle vest. It was a Sammy Guevara vest. It was just a regular vest. So we don't yet know where Sammy's allegiance lies. Obviously, I'm going to assume it's not with Jericho and Hager, and he is no longer going to be part of this group. But maybe they'll tell that story. I was worried for a little bit before all of this played out here and the big swerve happened. I was a little worried because, and I've said this the last couple of weeks, Jericho, as a babyface for the last several months, is very played out. And it feels just like the right time for him to revert back to being a douchebag heel. And when he went to go shake Eddie's hand, it looked like, all right, well, I guess we're getting babyface Jericho until the swerve happened. And so now we know Jericho is officially a heel again, and I think that's the right move. So that's actually the thing, the main thing I liked about this, is that it keeps Jericho heel instead of him just going right back to being a babyface. And it also makes it very clear that Santana and Ortiz are officially free of Jericho, free of the Inner Circle, free to do their own thing. Long overdue. Now, they're going to feud with Jericho, so they're not exactly completely and totally free of him, but now at least over time they can venture out on their own and do their own thing and not be attached at the hip to Chris Jericho. So that's two positive things that I extracted from this. Beyond that, I like 2.0. They're largely a comedy act, but I like their shtick. Daniel Garcia, I think, has a big upside. And so I guess Jericho, in his mind, is going to try to do with them what he thinks he did with Sammy Guevara and Santana and Ortiz, and he's going to try to elevate them by bringing them into the fold, and we'll see what happens. It'd be kind of funny if for all the TV time those guys were getting, and now that they're with Jericho, if they get less TV time than they were getting before. I mean, that's what happened with Santana and Ortiz. You know, over time, they were barely getting any television time. But Jericho staying as a heel here was the right move to make. So from there, we went right into an AEW World Championship match. It was Hangman Adam Page defending against Dante Martin of Top Flight. This was a late addition to the show. Late in the day, Tony Khan announced this match on Twitter. Nothing wrong with throwing one of your young guys in the ring for a championship match. They mentioned on commentary, I guess Dante Martin was listed at number two, I think, in the ranking. I haven't checked the rankings on the website. So there was at least some explanation for why is he getting a world title match, you know, because he was ranked. But it kind of reminds me of when Bret Hart wrestled Sean Waltman for the WWF title on Raw back in 94, and that's one of the greatest Raw matches of all time. It's one of my all-time favorite Monday Night Raw matches. Bret Hart against the 1-2-3 Kid. They went out there and they had an outstanding match that has stood the test of time. This match will not stand the test of time. In fact, this match will not be remembered 2 weeks from now. It went about 6 or 7 minutes. There was really nothing overly special about it. Like a lot of things on this show, it felt rushed. It was like, all right, let's go. You know, there was really no singular match on this show that had a lot of time. So this is not going to be a match that people are going to remember. But for the time it lasted, I thought it was good. You know, Paige turned a crossbody into a fallaway slam. Dante made a comeback, hit a missile dropkick for two. Hit a high kick on the apron, followed by an Orihara moonsault of his own. Usually we see Paige doing that. In this case, it was Dante. Paige countered another dropkick into a powerbomb for two. So they went back and forth for another couple of minutes. And then finally, Hangman turned him inside out with the buckshot for the win. Great sell by Dante Martin. So again, for the time it lasted, I thought it was good. After the match, Tony Schiavone got into the ring. One of many times on this show that Tony would be doing this. And he asked Hangman about his match against Adam Cole on Sunday. And instead, Paige invited Dante to come back into the ring. Come on back in here, kid. And he heaped great praise on Dante Martin. He said Dante was put in a tough spot when his brother Darius went down last year with an injury. He was thrust as a tag team wrestler into the singles ranks, and he made the most of his opportunity to the point where he made it all the way to the AEW World Championship here tonight. And he said, should you make it back here again, I'd be more than happy to do it again. What a magnanimous champion Hangman Page is. All of a sudden, we hear a voice say, for the love of God, will you shut your damn mouth? Here comes Adam Cole. And he walked out onto the stage and he said that Hangman got a fluke win over him at Revolution. He said, anybody can get lucky once. It was the story of my high school years. But he said it wouldn't happen again. And Hangman said that they could put that to the test. He was ready to throw down. Instead of asking for a rematch, Cole challenged him to a six-man tag. Cole said that he would be teaming with two men that Hangman knows very well, two of his best friends. His best friends being Adam Cole's best friends. So basically he was implying, he was inferring that the Young Bucks would be his partners in this match next week, without actually mentioning them by name. He said Paige can pick two partners of his own. They'll have a six-man tag. Cole said he's not going to stop until he gets what he wants. In this moment, it made no sense for Adam Cole to come out here and to ask for a six-man tag instead of just coming out and saying, I want a rematch. Come out and say it was a fluke. You beat me once. I bet you can't do it again. Do you have the guts to put your title on the line against me? Especially in a situation where Hangman looked like he was ready to rock. He was ready to kind of go with the flow and give the guy what he wanted. So why the fuck would he come out here and ask for a six-man tag when he could have just asked for a championship match? Now, it became a little more apparent why later in the show. Storyline-wise, no sense. Booking-wise, what they're trying to do here, because there was a segment later on in the back where Cole was with the Young Bucks and he was with Red Dragon, and they were arguing and Cole, you know, calmed them down. And Matt Jackson said to Cole in that segment, he goes, look, we're not interested in getting into the ring against Hangman. If that's what you had in mind, not interested. And Cole says, well, I wasn't talking about you guys. I was talking about Kyle and Bobby. And then they walked off. So it's going to be Cole and Red Dragon next week against Hangman and Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. We found out later on there was a weird segment with Hangman in the back with the Dark Order. He was apologizing to them, and he was, you know, they were saying, well, you know, we'll be your partners next week. And he said, well, gosh, you know, I was with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. I passed them by or whatever, and you know, they're going to be my partners next week. No offense. And so Dark Order acted like it didn't bother them, but the announcers were teasing, oh, tension between them. So I don't know where that is going. Hey, shout out to Sean Longworth. He just became a Sound Off superstar. Welcome, Sean. Welcome to the family. So yeah, they're building tension not only between the members of the Elite, but I guess they're building tension between Hangman and the Dark Order. Maybe the Dark Order will actually go dark again soon. But again, in the context of like kayfabe, I don't know why Adam Cole would come out and ask for a six-man tag. That was pretty stupid. Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Bryan Danielson was out next. The American Dragon, accompanied by William Regal. Boy, I never knew how much I would have loved that pairing until I saw them coming out to the ring together. What a fucking genius pairing this is. He was teaming with Jon Moxley, who entered by himself to his own theme music through the crowd, as he normally does. They were here to take on the team of J.D. Drake and Anthony Henry, so we are, in fact, getting a Danielson-Moxley team going forward, likely managed by William Regal. Danielson and Moxley, they went on the attack right at the bell, and we ended up with Moxley tagging in a few minutes later. He was continuing the beatdown that Danielson had started. Danielson got back into the match. He locked on a Romero special. So he has this guy up in like a surfboard position. Moxley gets into the ring and he starts biting the guy on the forehead. Now, I took a peek at Regal on the outside. He had this great smirk on his face. Like he was very much enjoying what he was seeing here. Drake laid in some hard chops and slaps on Moxley. He returned the favor, hit a rebound lariat. Moxley hit a very lazy-looking tope. I mean, he literally just, he was going for a suicide dive. And, yeah, when you go through the ropes, you're kind of diving, you're putting your arms out, you're trying to go right at the guy. Moxley literally just threw his body, and not like in a Darby Allin way, very lazily just threw his body out to the floor. I don't know what he was trying to do. Anyway, out on the floor, he hits a paradigm shift on Anthony Henry. Danielson hits the running knee on Drake in the ring, starts stomping his head in, applied the label lock for the submission, so no surprise, Danielson and Moxley, they pick up their first win as a tag team. Tony Schiavone got into the ring after the match. He was going to interview all three of them, including, or at least I thought he was going to interview all three. But he ends up interviewing William Regal. And Regal takes the microphone and he says, you know, it's been 29 years since you and I, Tony, have been doing this here on TBS. Almost 30 years. He said he knows that his time is flying by. He's 50. What did he say he was? 53? 52? I think he's 53 years old. He says he's lived a hard life and he knows he's not long for this world, which was kind of a morbid thing to say, but probably is true. I mean, if you go back and you read up on a lot of the abuse that he put himself through for all those years, it's a miracle he's even here now. You say the same thing about Jake Roberts and Scott Hall. You know, Regal went hard for a very long time with some very bad stuff before he finally turned his life around. But to hear him say it in that way was a little morbid. So then all of a sudden he got really emotional. And you could tell he was trying to hold back tears. His eyes got all red and he was, you know, struggling to compose himself. And he really wanted to thank Tony Schiavone. And he wanted to thank him for helping him in the past. And he didn't specify, you know, what exactly he was referring to. So perhaps one of these days on a podcast or something here, or Schiavone will comment more on that. But he's obviously referring to some stuff from the WCW days, some way that Schiavone helped him in real life because it got to him. So that was kind of cool. So Regal said that, you know, what happened is he was no longer required to come to work. He was no longer needed. His services were no longer required by his former employer. Imagine that. Imagine having William Regal under contract, and he was for a very long time. William Regal was employed by WWE for many, many years and probably was paid very, very well. But imagine not thinking that William Regal still had value, maybe in a different role, maybe in an on-air capacity not as a general manager, maybe as a manager for someone, or behind the scenes doing, you know, other things with him behind the scenes down in your developmental territory, as NXT has really been converted back to its roots, right? Back to its developmental roots. If anything, now would be the time that you would want someone like Regal down there. Imagine thinking that this man, he's outlived his usefulness, or what we're paying him, he's simply not worth it anymore. So let's cut him. That's effectively what WWE did. In one promo tonight, this man proved he's got a lot of worth and a lot of value left. And that's just on the air. Imagine what this guy can do for this company behind the scenes. Imagine what this guy can do for Tony Khan as Tony Khan mulls what a Ring of Honor relaunch is going to look like. What potential involvement Regal can maybe have in that. It's unbelievable. But he said his services were no longer required, and so he sat home for 2 months, and he completely disconnected from the wrestling business. And then somebody informed him that Bryan Danielson, on a recent episode of Dynamite, had mentioned his name. He had name-dropped him. Obviously, Danielson, this guy's a mentor to him. He always talks of Regal, always has. So he heard that, and he said, well, I guess that means I have to tune in. I have to tune into the show and see what's going on. And he tuned into the show, and he realized that Danielson was going to be fighting Jon Moxley, somebody else who he's very familiar with. And Regal said that he'll make somebody who wants to work hard a better professional wrestler. That's what he'll do. And he turned to Danielson, he pointed to him, and he said that Danielson is the wrestler that he should have been, were it not for all of his problems and all of his demons. He called Bryan Danielson the perfect professional wrestler. Now, there is no such thing as the perfect professional wrestler, but if ever there was a statement made in a promo on television that was as real could be, that was it right there. Bryan Danielson, he may not be perfect, but he is as perfect, as close to perfect of a professional wrestler as we have right now anywhere in wrestling. And just look at the run that he's been on since coming to AEW. Look at the work that he has put in on the mic, in the ring. Since coming to this company, this guy hasn't missed. He is the closest thing to a perfect pro wrestler that we have right now. You could start throwing other names out there too, Okada and Roman Reigns or people like that. But, you know, Danielson is, he's right at the top of the list. I mean, he is just firing on all cylinders right now. He remembered mentoring Danielson in the past and said that he had become everything that he didn't because Danielson doesn't have the problems that he had. Regal then turned his attention to Jon Moxley. And said that they put each other through things that would make the devil cry. There may be people out there who have no idea that these two had a feud and at least one match. I don't know if they had more than one. Going back to FCW, this would have probably been around 2011 or so. So if you're wondering, well, what's the history between the two of them? It at least goes back that far. So there's definitely, you know, bad blood in their past together. So for him to come out and to kind of unite these two, just from a storyline perspective and from a historical perspective, it makes so much sense. I'm kind of kicking myself that going into the pay-per-view on Sunday, I hadn't even thought about that possibility. I didn't even have Regal on the brain. Everybody was talking, when's Jeff Hardy going to show up? Or, you know, I mentioned, you know, Swerve was probably on his way in. Everybody's talking about all these new signings and where's Gargano going to go? And, you know, Bray Wyatt, people are still talking about Bray Wyatt. I mean, to me, the Bray Wyatt train has, you know, that train took off a long time ago. I can't really muster up enough interest to care about that anymore. But there's Regal. That's what made it so great on Sunday when he showed up, because as soon as I saw him coming out while these two were brawling in the ring and having that pull apart, it just made all the sense in the world. So he's talking about Moxley in this promo as well. He said, you know, what we're doing here is we're putting together the perfect pro wrestler with the most sadistic wrestler. We're putting the two of them together as an alliance, as a team. And he warned anybody who got into the ring with them that they will not like the outcome. He said their opponents will either step up or get stepped on. This was a great promo. I was almost worried he was going too long. They were going to cut him off, like the commercial was going to cut him off. Because this felt longer than most promos you would get on this show. I was fully engaged the whole time with what he was saying. Regal has a way, you know, I don't know if it's just the way he delivers his promos, his voice, or whatever it is. You pay attention when he talks. You pay attention to what he has to say. He can command the audience, I think. He's reached that point in his career now. He's the elder statesman. You know, he's the guy who you respect, and when he speaks, you shut up and listen. And to put him with these two, I love that idea. Absolutely love this idea. Now, I don't know, and I don't get the sense that they're going to be taking young guys under their wing like Danielson was talking about leading up to the pay-per-view. I think right now it's just a straight tag team. But I still think at some point, if they want to expand things a little bit and bring, you know, a couple of young guys in, you know, but now you know, got Garcia with Jericho, and he would have been probably the first guy I would have thought of for that. So it doesn't look like that's going to happen, but this promo was great. This promo was great. Now, Excalibur mentioned because the world title match earlier between Hangman and Dante Martin did not go the distance, it did not go the full 60 minutes, that Tony Khan booked a standby match with Pac one-on-one against Wheeler Yuta. I like that. I like that idea. I would like to see them mention things like that on TV a little more often. It just adds to the realism of it. It just adds to the realism of it. If you have a match that you're booking for the show, and it just so happens to go 5 minutes when it's a big championship match, maybe you think, oh, it's going to go 15 or 20, and it goes five. Let me think about it. You should have another match on standby, right? So it kind of made sense. Now, the match really was nothing much. I mean, these two are very good. I mean, Pac is great. Wheeler Yuta is also very good. Very basic match, though. Orange Cassidy came out with Yuta. His arm was in a sling. They showed a replay of Keith Lee launching Cassidy, excuse me, out of the ring at Revolution. There was that scary spot where Keith Lee just threw him out of the ring. And the guys who were supposed to catch him didn't totally catch him. He kind of overshot his target there. And he landed. I thought maybe he hit head first. They showed the replay from the other angle as Cassidy is coming in. And you could see he landed on the the metal part of the ramp right on his left arm and shoulder. And so they said the good news is that no surgery is needed. The bad news is that he is hurt. And he's going to be out of action for a little while. Danhausen was out there as well. So if you were a Danhausen fan, you got a very brief glimpse of Danhausen on the show. And it's very apparent when you listen to Jim Ross on commentary talk about Danhausen, he doesn't get Danhausen at all. He acknowledges that the people seem to like him, but he doesn't really understand Danhausen. To be perfectly fair, I don't really get it either. But the people went nuts whenever they see him. And I think when he debuted, didn't his t-shirt sell out quicker than any other t-shirt or something, I think, in the history of pro wrestling tees? Something crazy like that. So, I mean, just because you don't get it doesn't mean that there isn't a place for it on the show. And this is what I've tried to tell people about Orange Cassidy. I am not sitting here, despite the fact that this man is clearly trying to make himself up to look like me. I don't sit here and say, oh, I'm the biggest Orange Cassidy fan in the world. You know, there are times when I am watching an Orange Cassidy match and he's doing the little leg kicks or whatever, and it's like, all right, you know, to me, it's played out at this point, but it gets a reaction. And Tony Khan even said something recently where it gets a reaction. People like it. In the past, his matches, his quarter-hour segments for his television matches, ratings have sometimes gone up for his segments. So you can't dispute the fact that the guy is over with this audience and that there are people who like him and want to see him, even if you don't like, you know, the stuff that he's doing on TV. And I think Danhausen falls into that same category. You may not get it. It's weird. But, you know, then again, pro wrestling is fucking weird. You know, we got a woman in NXT who's narcoleptic, who goes to the ring in her pajamas and she falls asleep. Sometimes you get a weird fucking gimmick like that. I don't know how over that gimmick would be in a big building, the fact is, people like it. Jim Ross is not part of that demographic. I would not expect Jim Ross to be a huge Danhausen fan. Penta and Alex were in Pac's corner, so the Death Triangle members were out there with him. Pac hit an avalanche brainbuster late in the match and locked on the brutalizer for the win. Now, this is where we got the backstage segment. There was a segment with FTR and Tully Blanchard pre-taped earlier in the day. And it was very, this whole thing was just weird. It was very sudden how this all happened. I think it was Alex Marvez with them, asking what their next move is going to be. And Dax Harwood started talking about, you know, professional wrestling is his first love. He's looking at the Young Bucks. He's looking at Red Dragon next so he can look his daughter in the eye. And as he's talking about his daughter, he's talking about his family. Tully cuts him off. And Tully says, look, you're losing focus. When you brought me on, it was all about focusing on the championship and winning the championships. And Dax said, look, man, just talking about family. And then things got tense and he grabbed him and he said, look, you're talking about family here. And so Wheeler got between them and Wheeler looked at Tully and said, it is about family. And Tully, you're fired. And that was it. And then they cut away to the next segment. Now, this felt to me like I was reading a book, and it went from chapter 4 to chapter 6, and someone ripped chapter 5 out, and I missed something here. This was very abrupt. This felt like it came out of nowhere. I don't think this was being built up to at all. This almost felt to me like maybe Tully is out of the company soon. I don't know, maybe his contract is coming up. It's just me speculating here, but that's kind of how it felt. Is FTR going babyface? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, just judging by this one segment, this all felt very, very sudden, very awkward. You know, at least you would think in a situation like this, they would have a match on television and maybe Tully would inadvertently cost them the win when he tries to get involved. And then there would be some kind of a confrontation in the ring after. And then you can have Wheeler get on the mic and say, Tully, you're fired. They're in the back, and Dax is talking about his daughter, and all, you know, 2 seconds later, you're fired. Like, it's just fucking weird. Didn't really make a lot of sense to me. Then came the emergency board meeting of the AHFO, the Hardy Family Office, Andrade Hardy Family Office, excuse me. Matt immediately tells Andrade, look, you're only here to try to fire me. From the group that I helped found. I am the founder of this group. And now you're trying to get rid of me. Matt said that every time he puts on a suit, he transforms into an asshole. And then he made a crack at Andrade. You should know how that feels, because Andrade also comes out wearing a suit. He's an asshole. So Andrade said, let's put it to a vote. Matt was adamant. He said, it's not going to matter because my boys behind me, Private Party, they're going to vote thumbs up. They were going to take a thumbs up, thumbs down vote. Andrade said thumbs down. Jose said thumbs down. Matt said thumbs up. And at first, Isaiah and Mark Quinn of Private Party also said thumbs up. But you could tell exactly where this was going. I knew this was going this way just based on the interview that I did with Private Party at the last House of Glory show. It was 2 days, 2 or 3 days. After Keith Lee sent Isaiah Cassidy into orbit. And I asked him about that. That was when Matt Hardy, he bailed on them. He saw what was going on. He went into the crowd like Jeff Hardy at a house show. And I asked Isaiah about that, and he didn't want to even mention Matt's name. He said there was trouble in paradise with Matt Hardy. See, so I knew. I knew weeks ago that this was coming. So even though Private Party put their thumbs up at first, they ended up putting their thumbs down. Matt had his back turned to this, didn't see them put the thumbs down. And Andrade said that in this business, you always need to watch your back. Matt slowly turned around and he saw Private Party with their thumbs down. They all attacked him now. They ganged up on Matt Hardy. Played out exactly the way that I have been saying it was going to play out. He was going to be excommunicated from his own group. So the crowd was already waiting. You saw people in the crowd. They had their cell phones. They were looking at the aisle. They were waiting. They were waiting for it. And we didn't know if Jeff Hardy was going to be on the show tonight. There were rumors that, yes, he could, legally he can be. Others say no. His non-compete is up on March 9th. Today is March 9th, but you got to wait until midnight. And so on March 10th, he'll be free. So there was still a lot of, you know, debate about whether or not we were going to even be able to see Jeff Hardy on the show tonight. Well, it wasn't Jeff Hardy that came out. It was Darby Allin and Sting. And they come out and they come to the ring and attack the heels, but they get overwhelmed. The numbers are too great. And Matt Hardy is being beaten down. Sting is being beaten down. Darby Allin is being beaten down. And all of a sudden, we hear a very familiar piece of production music. And let me just put this to bed once and for all, because I already saw here in the live chat a little while ago a lot of confusion about how are they able to use that music. That's the Hardy Boys WWF / WWE theme music. So how did Tony Khan get the rights to it? Well, it's not WWE's music. Jim Johnston did not write the song or compose the song, I should say. It's a piece of production music. I think the first time I ever heard that song, and really I only became cognizant of it after the Hardy Boys started using it, because every time I would hear it in a television commercial, I would say, wait a minute, they're using the Hardy Boys theme music. But you would hear that music used in television bumpers, you know, and commercials and stuff. So it's production music. It's stock music. You know, a lot of that music that you used to hear on WWF television for like pay-per-view build-up videos and stuff. I'm talking going back to like the mid to late 90s. New Generation era, Attitude era. A lot of that music was stock music. You can find it on YouTube. You have to know what to type in. But if you type in like wrestling stock music, WWE production music, yeah, they all have unique names. Start listening. Go through a bunch of them. I guarantee you it will bring you back. You'll recognize some of those songs. This is one of them. That Tony Khan had to get the rights to it, but not from WWE. So this has nothing to do with WWE. He did not work out an agreement with WWE. He did not pick up the phone and call Vince McMahon and say, hey, Vince, I'd like to use the Hardy Boys music. WWE does not own shit when it comes to that. So now, No More Words, that would be different. I assume No More Words is something WWE does own. It's weird because Jeff was so excited to finally get that music back. And I think it was the night that he wrestled Karrion Kross and he beat him in Kross's Raw debut. He beat him in 90 seconds. That was the night, I think, that they finally allowed him to have his music back. And he was so excited and he was so happy about it. And then within months, he was out of the company. And now he can't use it again. So that I assume WWE owns, but I don't know that for sure. But yes, indeed, Jeff Hardy comes out to make the save, and everybody goes nuts, and he gets the big pop. But here's what I love, right? Here's what I love. So Jeff Hardy comes out. His brother is being beaten down mercilessly by the heels in the ring, right? His brother is being ganged up on and stomped on and beaten up. But Jeff Hardy, when he comes out, he stops to play to the crowd. So he's looking at the crowd. He's doing the, you know, he's doing the Jeff Hardy thing. Meanwhile, his brother is being assaulted in the ring while this clown is posing for the crowd. It'd be like Hogan coming out to make the save for somebody and stopping so he could cup his ear before he comes, which is something that fucker would do, and cupping his ear before he comes down to the ring. I had to have a little chuckle at that. He obviously doesn't care that much about his brother. So finally, Jeff comes into the ring, and there was a very awkward moment. The Blade was left in the ring, and each babyface had a turn to like throw a punch at him, and the Blade fed into the corner where Sting was crouched down, as if Sting was supposed to punch him. Sting looked confused, like, wait a minute, it's my turn? I didn't know it was my turn, and he just kind of sat there. It was a little awkward, but Matt Hardy came in, he hit the Twist of Fate. Jeff went up, and he hit the Swanton Bomb. That's a very good point, by the way. Mr. Elitist in the chat makes a very good point. He did kill his dog. That's right, in that storyline many years ago. That's true, actually. When they had Matt Hardy, when Jeff, I mean, it's not a funny story. I mean, Jeff's his trailer or mobile home or whatever burned down many years ago, including his dog Jack. And WWE turned it into a storyline. It basically had Matt take credit for that. So yes, in storyline, he did kill Jeff's dog. So perhaps Jeff was like, you know what? Beat him up a little bit more. I'll come down when I come down. Am I wrong, though? Was that not weird for him to stop and pose and play to the crowd first before coming down to the ring? Anyway, to be fair, if that was me and I saw my brother getting his ass kicked in the ring, I'd probably do the same fucking thing. So, anyway, the Hardys embraced, and then they stood face to face across from Sting and Darby while the Hardy Boys' music played over the PA system. So there was a lot to unpack in that moment, because as you see these two teams face to face like that, you know, you look at Matt and Jeff Hardy on one side, Sting and Darby Allin on the other. That's a marquee match in AEW. I don't know if we're gonna get that match at some point. The match that I think a lot of people are gonna get very excited about is a singles match between Jeff Hardy and Darby Allin. That's a match that has to happen at some point. Not now, not yet. But at some point, they have to do it. They have to do Jeff against Darby one-on-one. So, look, this was the worst-kept secret in wrestling. I think we all know that. But as soon as Jeff Hardy became available, you knew that Tony Khan was not going to be able to resist. He's already got one Hardy Boy. The ability to be able to put together maybe one final Hardy Boys reunion and do it in AEW was too much of an opportunity for him to pass up. And you look at the tag team division in this company, and now you add the Hardy Boys to a list that includes all of the teams they have, Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, and the Young Bucks and Red Dragon, and younger teams even, Top Flight now back together. You have the Acclaimed, right? You've got FTR. You've got Jon Moxley and Brian Danielson, another new addition to the tag team division. And there's others that I'm not even thinking of right now. Santana and Ortiz, 2.0, the list goes on. That division is stacked. And now you can tell this great story. You don't have to rush it. You can take your time. The Hardy Boys going for one last run as the tag team champions. They've been tag champions in WWE. They've been tag champions. They were tag champions in Ring of Honor, I believe, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm almost positive they were tag champs in Ring of Honor, but I could be wrong about that. Impact. Technically, they were WCW Tag Team Champions, even though that was in WWE, so it's bullshit. And now they can add the AEW Tag Team titles onto their Hall of Fame resume, eventually. So they got a lot of new toys to play with here in this company, and Jeff Hardy all of a sudden has a new lease on life. So, backstage, after this, Shane Swerve. I called him Swerve. I called him Swerve. Like he's smearing some cream cheese on a bagel. They were Ring of Honor, right? I just want to confirm that they were. Okay. I was almost positive, but then for a second I blanked out. I couldn't remember if for sure if they were tag champs in Ring of Honor. But indeed they were. So in the back, we had Swerve Strickland being interviewed, the newest addition to the AEW roster, although the new additions are coming hot and heavy. He's not even the new addition anymore. The guy just debuted at the pay-per-view on Sunday. He's not even the latest addition to the roster. Tonight alone, Jeff Hardy is All Elite. Paige VanZant signed her contract. Swerve is old news. That's the problem with all these signings. When Keith Lee showed up in a backstage segment later on this show, he positively felt like old news. It already felt like a lifetime ago that this guy signed his contract, because there were already four or five other people that have signed contracts since then. So Swerve is already old news. But he was interrupted by Tony Nese. He got the official welcome to the AEW roster. He was interrupted in his promo. And Tony Nese comes over and he congratulated him in very sarcastic fashion. He challenged him to a match. Swerve said that he would bless him because it is Swerve's house. So they're going to have a match on Rampage this Friday night. you know, for Swerve's first match, he has to win. It would be insane for him not to. And Tony Nese is somebody who is talented and can go in there and give him a great match and do the job. So I don't have any issue with it. It's not, you know, it's not an overly exciting match, but Swerve needs some people to beat. And it looks like that's the role that Tony Nese is signed for, you know, to put somebody like him over. Tony Schiavone was back in the ring yet again to interview the face of the Revolution, winner of the ladder match from Sunday at Revolution, Wardlow, who has a TNT championship match next week in San Antonio on Dynamite. We just didn't know at this point who he would be wrestling. So Wardlow comes out, no MJF, no Sean Spears, all by himself. And this is really the first, independent promo that we have seen and heard from Wardlow on AEW television. Now, I've heard Wardlow give interviews on podcasts and stuff. He's very well spoken. He's got that great booming voice. He's very articulate. He speaks well. He carries himself well. I mean, the guy is a star in every way. Everything you would look for in a guy like him. He's young. He's got size. He can speak well. He can talk, right? That's important. And his matches, we haven't seen him in a really long match yet, but you know, he's had some good matches. I think back to the cage match with Cody Rhodes. The match with Punk, you know, it was more of an angle, really, than a match. So he hasn't been tested in the ring yet. He has not been fully tested inside the ring in, like, a big, long match. And it feels like that's coming very soon against MJF. You know, I mean, he's going to have a TNT title match next week. That'll be a test. But I think that if you are looking for certain things, and if you're looking to check off certain boxes in what you would look for in a wrestler, I think Wardlow checks most of those boxes. So, you know, he's a guy who they really took from the independent scene. Hardly anybody knew who he was. You know, and I said this on Sunday, and they've really started from scratch with this guy and taken their time. They've been very patient over the last 3 years, slowly building him as MJF's muscle. 2.5 years, whatever it's been since they put them together. And here we are now. You know, he's not the world champion yet, but he's on his way. He has gotten over organically. The fans are behind him. They have created a star. For all of the former WWE guys that, you know, that Tony Khan gets criticized for bringing in, and there are a lot of them that he has brought in, you also have to be creating your own talent and building your own talent. And I feel like they're doing that. Wardlow is one of those names you got to put at the top of the list. You know, you've got guys like Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin and MJF, but Wardlow is right up there with them. So tonight, if this was a test for him, I think he passed with flying colors. He's out there and, you know, he said that he is still under contract to MJF. But he said it was time to stop supporting somebody else's dreams and start fulfilling his own. And he knew that MJF wasn't a good person, and he hopes that everybody can forgive him for even associating with him. But now, Wardlow grew up very poor and said that his mother was a saint and tried to do right by him, and that granted him the opportunity to provide for his family, and working for MJF allowed him to give his family and his mother a better life. And he gave Wardlow his foot in the door, and for that, he thanks him. He thanks MJF, but said that doesn't give him the right to disrespect, threaten, and put his hands on him. Wardlow said he's still under contract to him, but he no longer gives a damn. He said he's no longer his bodyguard or a member of the Pinnacle. I am finally free. And he added that he hopes MJF is as intelligent as he claims to be and that he releases him from his contract. He says that he could simply go his way and MJF could go his, and it could be an amicable split. Wardlow said the only thing he cares about is winning the TNT Championship and earning a new contract. He said that after years of giving, it is his turn to take. And he doesn't want to stop at the TNT title. He says he wants it all, like Scarface. He said AEW is officially Wardlow's world. And that was it. Shockingly, no interruptions. This bucked the trend of almost every single promo that we ever see in AEW which is invariably interrupted by some. I was just waiting for Sean Spears to come out or MJF. And there was no interference. He said his piece. They played his music. The fans cheered. And that was the segment, the way it should be. This was very well done. This was very well done. Guy's a star. Now we wait for MJF's response, which I'm sure is going to be to refuse Wardlow's request. You know, Wardlow is talking like, look, you and I could just go our separate ways. Give me a fucking break. We all know that they're not just going to go their separate ways. MJF is going to hold him to that contract. He's going to be like Vince McMahon to Mustafa Ali. Playing the role of Vince McMahon will be MJF, and playing the role of Ali will be Wardlow, even though the two of them look nothing alike. He is going to keep this fucker under contract, no matter how miserable he might be. No matter how many times he asks politely, he is going to keep this fucker under contract and make him serve out his time. That's exactly what this is. That's exactly what this is like. So I mentioned Keith Lee before. We did get a brief backstage segment with Keith Lee. He was being interviewed. He was interrupted by QT Marshall. QT Marshall got his ass kicked by Hook on the buy-in on Sunday. Now he comes over to Keith Lee, and he welcomes him to AEW, and he says that he noticed that Keith Lee has an issue with Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. And he let Lee know that he and the Nightmare Factory, they have his back. And Keith Lee said, I have a very large back. I'm good. And then he walked off. And Marshall, like some fucking comic book villain, was like, oh, he'll pay. He'll pay. And I looked at this, and I'm sure like a lot of you, I thought, oh, well, it only took a few weeks. They have Keith Lee on television with QT Marshall. Keith Lee, though, has had one singles match on AEW. Well, actually, no, he's had two, right? He's had two. Right, it was J.D. Drake. Was it Drake that he wrestled? He's only had a couple of matches on television, not counting the ladder match from Sunday. QT Marshall will really be the first name person, I guess, if you want to say name person, as far as like a singles feud. And I would rather see Keith Lee winning those matches and not already being beaten by people. And so if they're setting up for a match with Marshall, which they are, because they announced it later, it's an easy win for him. So I don't mind it. But if he gets mired in some kind of a long program on television with QT Marshall, then that's not going to be good. He does not need to be attached to this guy or somebody that low on the totem pole there. He should be beating guys and working, slowly working his way up. In fact, whenever Miro is ready to come back, I could see doing something. In fact, I probably would even consider doing something with Keith Lee and Miro. How about a Keith Lee Miro program? Whenever Miro is finally ready to come back, he's been out hurt. Miro just signed a new contract with AEW, I think, for another 4 years. He's going to be sticking around until 2026. He's not going anywhere. One match with QT Marshall is fine. Anything more than that, Keith Lee should not be wasting his time with this. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus against the Acclaimed for the AEW Tag Team Championship, our second title match of the night. Max Caster's rap, I didn't write the whole thing down. But Caster's rap included a line about Jungle Boy's hair and not being able to grow pubes. There you go. Something about Batman, I think, at the very end of it. That's all. That's what I got out of this promo. I got Batman and pubes were the key takeaways from this rap. There's a visual for you. Dry chicken without flavor. Thank you for the super chat. I will be reading all of your super chats in just a little bit. So get them on in. The Acclaimed, they took control ahead of the commercial break. Coming back from the break, Jungle Boy hit a rebound lariat, got the hot tag to Luchasaurus. Out on the floor, Luchasaurus avoided a boombox shot. Jungle Boy took out Caster and Bowens with a flip dive, and Luchasaurus hit a choke slam. Standing moonsault, Bowens broke up the pin. Jungle Boy went for a Doomsday Escalera, but Bowen shoved him off the top rope, and the Acclaimed hit the mic drop. Luchasaurus broke up the near fall. The Acclaimed, after that, it was pretty much curtains for them. I mean, you knew it was going to be. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus hit an Escalera Doomsday device. Dinosaur took out Caster with the Tail Whip. Jungle Boy pinned Bowens to retain the titles. It was a good match, but the Acclaimed lose way too much to really take them seriously in this type of match, you know, contending for the championships. I don't see how anybody can really take them seriously at that level. They're a good team. And we've seen Bowens more than Caster put in singles matches where he shines and he looks good. But the Acclaimed almost always lose. I'm not even sure you needed to do this match on the show. As frenetic as the pacing was, and they tried to get a lot of shit in this week, I guess they wanted to just add another title match. I don't think this match really even needed to happen on this show. Could have done this next week or on Friday, maybe. We got a quick backstage segment with Jade Cargill and Smart Mark Sterling. Drew wants to know, what do I think of these gas prices? They're trying to take my super chat. I'm going to need more super chats for these fucking gas prices. Holy shit. You're not wrong about that. But anyway, Cargill and Sterling were in the bag as a pre-tape promo, and Jade was wondering who would step up next to get her kiss of death, and they aired the footage from Revolution right at the start of her match with Ty Conti, where she grabbed her by the face and she planted a kiss on her lips. This might be a new thing now, where at the beginning of her matches, she grabs her opponent and kisses them. I can get behind that. I think I like that almost as much as the lick of death that Katrina would get. I can't put it above the lick of death. The lick of death was just a kind of in another category. Katrina's lick of death in Lucha Underground, but I guess this is going to be Jade's new thing going forward. Thunder Rosa one-on-one against legit Layla Hirsch, with the winner going on to challenge Britt Baker for the AEW Women's World Title. And next week, they're going to be in San Antonio, Rosa's hometown, St. Patrick's Day Slam episode of Dynamite. And I do believe that 1 year ago, it was on the St. Patrick's Slam edition of Dynamite that Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa had their lights out match. I believe that was the episode that the match took place in the main event. Here we are 1 year later. But first, she would have to beat Layla Hirsch. Rosa went for an early Fire Thunder driver, but Layla fought out and started stomping on Rosa's arm. Continued to go after the arm and worked it over. Hirsch climbed the ropes. Rosa cut her off at the top and hit a superplex into a fireman's carry neckbreaker. Hirsch went for the turnbuckle wrench that she used to beat Chris Statlander in their buy-in match on the pre-show Revolution. On Sunday, when Red Velvet ran out to stop her and take it away from her. And this was not good. Absolutely nobody cared about this. I'm not sure people in the building, unless they were right there in the front row, even could tell who it was at first. There was no reaction at all to Red Velvet running over and taking the wrench away from Layla. So Layla got back into the ring. Rosa went for her finish, but Hirsch locked on a cross arm breaker instead. Rosa got to the ropes. Eventually, Rosa did hit the Fire Thunder driver, though, for the win. The crowd was largely disinterested in this match, and it just did not feel like... It's a weird thing, because they announced the stipulation. This was an eliminator match, as they like to call them, where the winner was going to challenge for the championship. So there were stakes on the line. It wasn't just some random match with nothing at stake. And it was kind of alarming how little the people even really gave a shit about any of this. And the match itself was pretty basic from these two. Tony Schiavone announced, he didn't even bother getting into the... Tony, at this point in the show, Tony was like, I'm not going to the ring, fuck this shit. They didn't even show him on camera. He probably just stood up from his chair at the announce desk and got the house mic and made the announcement that he was being told in his ear that next week it will, of course, be Thunder Rosa challenging Britt Baker in a rematch for the AEW Women's title. However, this time, it would be inside of a steel cage. What did we talk about on the Revolution stream the other night? I did float the idea that they could do a steel cage match, because it just seemed to make sense. all the fucking interference in that match on Sunday to the point where it was just beyond ridiculous. What do you do to keep Jamie Hayter out? What do you do to keep, you know, Rebel out of the equation? I mean, you could just say that you're barred from ringside, and if you interfere, you're fired. Boy, you know, that would take care of it. Or you put a cage up. You put a cage. Not that the cage necessarily ever stops people from trying to get involved. But sure enough, that's what they're doing. We're going to get a steel cage match on TV next week. And they cut to the back. Baker was standing there with Rebel and with Jamie Hayter. And she was wondering why Rosa was even getting another shot so quickly after losing at Revolution. She said this conspiracy shit lives on. But where's your friend Mercedes? Where's Mercedes Martinez? She goes, well, it's not going to matter after Jamie Hayter takes care of her on Rampage this Friday. She said a year ago, Rosa got the pin in their lights out match, but who really won? Who came out on top after that match? Of course, it was Britt Baker. Britt Baker's the one who went on to win the championship. And so here we are. You talk about, you know, coming back full circle 1 year later. This time Britt Baker is the champion. It's not lights out. It's not unsanctioned, but it's in a cage. I don't see how they headline next week with anything other than that match. And I certainly hope that there's more interest in that match than there was in this match tonight. It would be impossible for there not to be. They're in Rose's hometown. That crowd's going to be going crazy for her. That is your main event next week, especially because they're going to change the title next week. They are not going to put these two back in the ring together and do the rematch this quickly. Instead of waiting for Double or Nothing, they're doing it next week. They're not running this match back with a stipulation to keep the others out and doing it in Rose's hometown and not putting the title on. 100% guaranteed we will have a new world champion next week, and her name is Thunder Rosa. And again, like I said, the crowd, I am sure, will be a lot more enthusiastic for that match than they were for this one here tonight. Speaking of title changes, the main event on this show was for the TNT Championship. Sammy Guevara defending against Scorpio Sky with Ethan Page and Dan Lambert in his corner, and Paige Van Zandt in the front row with her husband, we were told. He actually came into the ring later. He was just kind of joining, I guess, with everybody else, but Paige was in the front row. So Sammy is really stupid. And after introducing a table into the match, there was a table set up on the outside. He lays Scorpio Sky across the table. And he goes up to the top rope, and his thing is, whenever he's about to do something really dumb, he acknowledges it, and he has to tell you that he's crazy. So they zoom in on his face, and he sticks his tongue out, and he goes, I'm crazy. Or at the pay-per-view, I think he said, I'm fucking crazy. And then he does some crazy shit that I'm sure he probably thinks to himself, I hope I don't kill myself doing this move. Well, he went for a 630 senton off the top rope to the floor. Scorpio Sky, of course, rolled out of the way, and Sammy crashed and burned through the table. So here comes his girlfriend. Here comes Ty Conti running out to the ring, very concerned about her boyfriend. He's holding his rib cage as if he might have broken some ribs, and you know, the referee is checking on him, and the doctor, Doc Sampson, is there to check on him, and they cut to the final picture-in-picture, and during the break, it looked like Ty and the referee were holding him up, and they were escorting him to the back. It looked like this match was going to be over. And of course, as the commercial break is about to come to an end, they're about halfway up the ramp, but all of a sudden, as if on cue, Sammy has a change of heart and says, oh, you know what, I can continue this match. And just as they come back on the air, who's back in the ring but Sammy Guevara? He's ready to go. It's almost like telling him, hey, the commercial is almost over. It gave him this second life. He got his second wind. And he got back into the ring, and first thing he did was he spat in Scorpio Sky's face. Not a very babyface move. So he spat in this guy's face, and Sky made him pay for it. He started punishing him. Conti got up in Paige Van Zandt's face on the outside. She went nose to nose with her. Paige, I guess, was mouthing off or whatever. So there was a little stare down there briefly between the two of them. Sammy fought back. He hit a springboard cutter. And this is sort of the blueprint of Sammy Guevara matches. You know, he'll do a really big spot, some crazy move, and then he'll sell that he's hurt. He hurt his ribs, he hurt his knee. But then he'll just start doing springboard cutters and dives and stuff. And then, oh, you know, after that, oh, a little sell after that. He's got to cut down on that. He's got to dial that shit back. If you're going to do something that ends with you selling a major injury, you know, you can fight through the pain and do certain things. But when you see him doing the double jump and this, it's just ridiculous, you know. It's just, and then he remember, oh, I got to sell. It doesn't come off well. But he hit a springboard cutter, and then he got sky up and hit the GTH. Instead of winning with that, though, he goes up top for a shooting star press. Sky got the knees up on the way down, and it did not look as if he got the knees. So, didn't really look great. Kind of barely grazed the knees, it looked like, but he sold it anyway. Lambert got up on the apron at that point to distract the referee. On the outside, we see Ty Conti, and she gets up in Ethan Page's face. And then from behind, attacking Ty Conti, is Paige Van Zandt. She knocks her down. Van Zandt then sends her into the ring steps. All of this is distracting Sammy on the inside. So he's distracted now. And Scorpio Sky catches him with the TKO and pins him 1-2-3. Scorpio Sky is the new TNT champion. And they said on commentary, he becomes the first man to ever hold the TNT title as well as the AEW tag team title. So I guess that's an accomplishment, I suppose. It'll be more impressive if he ever wins the world title. Then he can call himself a triple crown winner. But I don't see that happening. So Paige Van Zandt in the ring after she gave Ty Conti a kick to the head. And we got the sight of an unconscious Ty Conti lying on her boyfriend's body and then signing her AEW contract on Ty's ass. She signs her contract on Ty's body and then all the heels celebrate. And Scorpio Sky has both TNT belts up. And that is how they went off the air. And they leave you with the question now, you know, because next week, Wardlow's going to get his TNT title match in San Antonio. It's going to be Wardlow one-on-one against Scorpio Sky. So it's a heel for him to go up against now. And I wondered about that. I said, you know, do they want to do Sammy against Wardlow because Sammy is a babyface? But now so is Wardlow. Well, the answer is no, because they put the title on Scorpio Sky because they want a heel in there against Wardlow next week. Now, is Scorpio Sky going to be a transitional champion? No. No, he's not. I guaranteed you the women's world title is going to change hands next week, but you're not going to get two title changes on the show. And the reason that Wardlow is not going to win the title next week is because MJF and or Sean Spears are going to cost him the match and make it very clear that even though he asked him kindly this week if he could let him out of his contract, that's going to be MJF's way of saying, fuck you. The answer is no. And he is going to cost him the TNT title exactly the way that I laid it out on the stream on Sunday. And I went 12-0 in my predictions on Sunday. I got a clean sweep on that pay-per-view. So I know what I'm talking about here. We'll make it 13-0 next week. Thunder Rosa will be the women's champion. Wardlow will not win the TNT title. And MJF will fuck him over. So Scorpio Sky, who knows? I can't say that he'll be a champion for a long time. He may still end up being a transitional champion for all I know, but he will not be a 1 week long transitional champion. He'll hold it for a little bit longer than that. So that was your edition of Dynamite this week. A very newsworthy show. It actually was not even the strongest episode of Dynamite they've done over the last month or so. But on the whole, I thought it was very good, but it was more of a newsworthy show in terms of just various things going on, people betraying each other, factions breaking up, Jeff Hardy debuts, this guy debuts, new champion crown, a lot of stuff going on this show. Next Wednesday, St. Patrick's Day Slam is Britt Baker and Rosa in a cage, Wardlow against Scorpio Sky. This Friday, though, on Rampage, Keith Lee one-on-one against QT Marshall. Swerve Strickland against Tony Nese. Mercedes Martinez against Jamie Hayter, and Darby Allin one-on-one against Mark Quinn of Private Party. And so that is the lineup for Rampage coming up on Friday night. Let's take a look at the poll on Twitter with almost 1,300 votes in so far. 87.6% thumbs up, 12.4% thumbs down. A very good score, an excellent score for the post-revolution episode of Dynamite. You know what this felt like in a lot of ways? This felt like what the night after WrestleMania used to be. You know, the Raw after WrestleMania the last few years the last couple of years, we didn't even have fans in the building, so you got to put a little asterisk next to it. But, you know, go back even further than that. When was the last time that the Raw after WrestleMania really felt wild and fun and special the way that it used to? I feel like it's been many, many years. This was like their version of what that Raw used to be. You know, this was a largely fun episode with a lot of shit going on. New faces showing up, title change. So that's really what this show kind of felt like. All right, let's get into your super chats here. Tuxedo T Servo, $5 super chat. First the GFY stuff and now the Jericho Appreciation Society. Is Jericho trying to get people to laugh at how lame his ideas are lately? I'm starting to think that that might be the case just because he is a heel. I'm certainly hoping that that is the case, because otherwise these names are pretty bad. Jamie Dorsch. Oh, there's Turtlehead. There's the Bobby Lashley tongue. Jamie Dorsch, if Rock against Roman is the biggest match WWE can do, what is the biggest match that AEW can do? Well, are we talking exclusively with AEW talent, or maybe one day when we're able to get some New Japan talent coming back? Maybe are we talking New Japan talent too? Because I could think of a couple of Okada matches I'd like to see. But I think from existing members on the roster right now, what is the biggest potential match? You know what? I still would like to see Punk and Danielson get back in the ring. It's been like a decade since I've seen them have a match. That's a match I would like to see very much. I think once Omega comes back, I think Omega and Punk also. Probably one of the bigger matches that they could do that we haven't seen yet. Chris Williams with the $9.99. The tag division is so stacked. Would TNT type tag belts work? Or just wait for trios titles? Also, what kind of weird... that Jeff waited so long. Thank you. I'm glad I'm not the only one who recognized that. That Jeff left his brother to die while he danced. Because Jeff Hardy, I guess, just, he loves to dance, you know? He's a dancing fool. I would wait for trios belts. I don't think we need tag belts, TNT tag belts, and trios belts. So it's going to be one or the other. And I think trios would just be a little bit of a different spin on things. So I would wait for the trios belts. The Night 94. This was one of the best Dynamites of all time. All right. Look at that. High praise for this show tonight. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury. This wasn't a bad show, but every segment felt extremely rushed. That's what happens when you try to shove so much stuff in not even a full 2 hours, really, because you take out the commercials, it's like an hour and 44 minutes or something, I think. Maybe not even, actually. It might be less than that. It might be like an hour and 38. Nick Grosso, $9.99 Super Chat. Thank you, Nick. Very good show tonight. Like the Jericho segment. Hopefully Daniel Garcia will get the rub. It was great to hear the old Hardy Boys theme, and wasn't Paige Van Zandt supposed to sign her contract tonight? She did. You obviously missed the very end of the show. She signed it literally on Ty Conti's body at the end of the night. James Auburn with the $5 super chat. Thank you, James. This is Brian, the perfect wrestler, the wrestler I could have been, who I want to have babies with. This is Moxley. I found him in the trash. Yeah, that's basically how to sum up the William Regal promo. Actually, you know what? You could use another analogy. It would be like Vince McMahon, over the years, he has... he's posted stuff. Actually, was it Triple H? I think for Triple H's birthday one year, I think he was lavishing praise upon him in a tweet. You know, and maybe it was somebody else, but I want to say it was Triple H. And he was like, you know, happy birthday to my son-in-law, the king of kids, whatever, Triple H. And then it was Shane's birthday, his actual son. And I think it was like, happy birthday to my son, Shane. It's like, wow. Let's see here. We got Dick the Cock Johnson. Always good to hear from him. Bro, Wardlow better not even break a sweat with Sky next week after how that title match was booked. Wardlow's not winning the TNT title next week. He's not winning the title. Drew Johnson, Sammy lost to Sky. That don't work for me, brother. Boots. $5 super chat. What if Brian Cage costs Wardlow the TNT title and becomes MJF's new muscle? Smash that like button, he says. Yes, smash that like button indeed. Somebody floated that idea to me a couple of weeks ago, and I really wasn't a fan of it because to me, all you're doing then is you're just swapping one big guy out for another. So after all this time, MJF goes from having one big, strong bodyguard to just having another one. I mean, it'd be like Sean and Diesel breaking up, and then Sean replacing Diesel with... Well, I mean, I guess he did, actually. He replaced him with Sid. What the fuck am I talking about? But that didn't work out too well for Shawn Michaels. So I don't know. I'm not sold on that, just because it would just feel like it's like a lateral move. You're just going from one big guy to the other, and does MJF... Does he need him? Does he really need another one? It would be good for Brian Cage. It would get him, you know, a prime spot on television. So for him, it would be great. I'm not totally sold on that idea, though. But if you're going to give him another heavy, then you know what? You could go with Brian Cage. As long as he keeps his mouth shut and doesn't talk. Because that is the weak part of his game. Let other people do the talking for him. But the thing is, though, I mean, how long could that last, you know, because he's in the ring doing flashy moves and stuff, and, you know, in this storyline, he'd have to take a backseat to MJF. Are you going to put them together and then break them up in a few months? I mean, I don't know. I'm not totally sold on that yet. Good morning, Nir. Nir is in the chat, all the way from Israel, wishing everybody a very good morning. Old Dirty Sausage, Jeff Hardy against Darby would be money. Book it, TK. No, don't book it yet. Not yet. Soon. You know that meme with the horse in the building looking out the window? I don't know how the horse got in there, by the way. But the horse is looking out the window and the word on the meme is just soon. Soon. We'll get that match. Drew Johnson, sick intro, bro. Thank you. I think that's going to be our new intro for the Wednesday streams. Always trying to change it up and make it look cool for you guys. James Cooper, $9.99 super chat. Kind of hope we see Claudio soon. Would be cool to have him in there with Danielson and Mox, although if they did add two younger guys, it could get bloated. Who is better all time? Hunter, Jericho, or Orton? Wow. Who is better all time? I think it's I'm going to go with Jericho on that. I think it's between Triple H and Jericho, and I would go with Jericho. And the reason I would go with Jericho is because Jericho was a top guy in multiple places. Triple H was never a top guy anywhere but WWE. And so I think that gives Jericho an edge. We could talk about championships and stuff, but I mean, come on. You win a championship when you're booked to win a championship. If you really want to judge it just based on their skill level and their success in the business, you don't go by championships, because championships are not won in wrestling. They're given. They're booked. Jericho went to New Japan, did big business in that match at the Tokyo Dome against Kenny Omega. Jericho was one of the founding stars of AEW, first champion in AEW. Helped build the company up to get it to this point. And he was a big star in WWE, just like Triple H was. You could say that Triple H was bigger than he was in WWE, but you know, Jericho was big there nonetheless and feuded with all the same guys Triple H did and had some great classic matches. So I think Jericho actually gets the edge. In fact, I don't even think it's all that close. Team Forward with the $2 super chat. Thank you, Mr. Forward, for the $2. Punk MJF feud should end in an I quit match. Well, again, I would not put Punk and MJF back in the ring together for a long time. I mapped it out on the stream on Sunday. I think the way to go would be to have MJF win the championship off of Punk. So to do that, Punk has to win the title first, but I think when the time comes and they circle back to each other, he's the one that MJF takes the title off of. He gets his ultimate revenge, and he goes up 2-1 in their feud. And that's how MJF becomes the champion. I like that story. Rodimus Prime, $25 super chat. Thank you, Rodimus. Pretty good show on Sunday, same way tonight. That said, going to the SmackDown show in Birmingham, Alabama on Friday. Hopefully it will be a good one. Well, they got some competition after that show on the... Well, I mean, Sunday was a pay-per-view. Even tonight, though. I think tonight's show is going to be hard to top on SmackDown, but they'll try. Bryant Becerra with the $20. Thank you, Bryant. A lot happening on Dynamite. Next week, I will be there live. How about that? Brian's going to be in San Antonio. Hey, Brian, you should bring a sound-off sign. I don't know where you're sitting. Got to represent the sound-off family at Dynamite next week. Dry chicken without flavor, $10 super chat. Awesome Dynamite tonight. I want to apologize, Solomonster, for what I said and mention in one of my super chats last Sunday about CM Punk MJF's match. It was boneheaded on my part. I don't have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know what you're apologizing for. But whatever it is, don't worry about it. Linklex7, Sting, looking at Jeff Hardy in the ring like, don't you victory road this opportunity that you got. He did flash him a smile. I did notice that. I would like to think he's just happy to see Jeff, you know, sober and coherent and doing well. But that is the first time that they have shared a ring since Victory Road in that whole debacle in TNA. Mark O'Shea, $11 super chat. Awesome show tonight. Smash that like button. Where are we anyway? I haven't even checked. Where are we on the line? We're over 400. Let's see if we can get that up to 5. We'll see if we can get that up to 5 before we get out of here tonight. Oh, the BDSM. Is that what it was? That's right. Yes, the BDSM. He mentioned, super chat? He mentioned BDSM and CM Punk and MJF in the same super chat. Yes, don't ever do that again. You are forgiven, but don't ever do that again. Anderson Blitz, $1.99. Jeff and Sting in the same ring. I wonder how Sting feels. Nayef Alsafar, $9.99 super chat. Thank you, Nayef. Dry chicken without flavor. I knew it. Somehow, some way, Private Party was going to turn on Matt Hardy. Andrade now has his own version of Los Ingobernables in AEW. Joseph Brooks, do you think CM Punk doesn't need a title in AEW? He doesn't. He doesn't, but I still think for the MJF story, he should get it, so that he can drop it to him. But Danielson doesn't need to be the champion. CM Punk doesn't need to be the champion. Undertaker didn't need to be the champion in his heyday. He didn't need the title, but he got it anyway. So no, Punk doesn't need it, but I think to fit the story, he should get it at some point soon. Tomas, $4.99. What's going on, Tomas? Love that Jeff saw his brother get attacked, and on the way to the ring, he decides, let me gyrate my balls to the crowd first. The man has his priorities. He is ever the showman. Derek Jackson, who is Danhausen? I've never seen him wrestle ever. I haven't either, now that I think about it. I've seen Danhausen plenty of times. I don't believe I've ever actually seen a Danhausen match. So I guess you and I are in the same boat. Brian says, I got fifth row floor seats. Not sure it'll make the cat. Well, if you're on the camera side, you might. You might. I'm just saying. You don't have to. I'm just putting it out there. HBKC83. Who on that AEW roster is in need of a change and can benefit from either a heel or a face turn? Well, I would have said Jericho going face to heel, and it looks like we got that. I mean, beyond that, I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I mean, nobody... I mean, I think when Omega comes back, he'll end up being a babyface. I think Omega is a babyface. I think it's been long enough. So I probably would say Kenny is a babyface. Dry chicken without flavor. Jeff Hardy is free. And all elite. Hopefully it's the Hardys against Private Party at Double or Nothing. And then later on FTR or the Bucks. Yeah, I mean, again, that's why you can drag this out over the course of the entire year into next year. Before they even sniff the tag team titles. You know, they don't have to hold those titles for a while. You just hope that everybody can stay healthy and that nobody gets hurt and end up being, you know, laid out for a long time. Oh, look at, oh, what a name. Look at this. Well, what is that? The Yatagarasu. The $4.99 super chat. Regal mocks Brian goes to recruit Hook before the year is over. I like the way you think. Although, if it's me, when the time comes that there's a split in Team Taz, I think Hook goes for the FTW. I mean, it just seems like a natural that Hook ends up being the FTW champion. But yeah, I think at some point, if Brian and Moxley are going to recruit younger talents, and right now it doesn't look like that's what they're going to do. Absolutely, why wouldn't they go after Hook? Why not? Drew Johnson. Talking about Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and some sunny days. And... Hey, Drew, did you hear what CM Punk said at the media scrum after Revolution the other night? He got emotional. CM Punk started crying. He broke down. Legit. During the media scrum. Talking about... I don't even remember how he brought this up. Oh, I know it was. So there was somebody in the back, he didn't name who it was, who came up to him and said, I just want you to know that were it not for you, I would not have gotten into the wrestling business. You inspired me to want to become a professional wrestler. And it really made him very emotional. And then he brought up Bret Hart. And he talked about how Bret, it's bullshit because Bret Hart should be the one getting paid millions of dollars to go work matches in Saudi Arabia. And he goes, he would give all of, like, everything in his career and this comeback and everything, he would give it all to Bret if he could, for Bret to have a proper ending to his career. And I thought, what a classy thing for him to say. What a classy thing for him to say. And what a fucking waste. All the matches we could have gotten with Bret, you know, because of the concussion and everything that we were deprived of. It's too bad. It's too bad. But funny enough, I didn't hear Punk, you know, talking about Shawn Michaels the other night. He was talking about Bret, and he said Bret Hart was right. Bret Hart is always right, was his exact quote. I might frame that, actually, and put that up on my wall somewhere. Bret Hart was right. Bret Hart was always right, or is always right, and then attribute it to CM Punk. I might get that framed, actually, like a nice gold frame. So every time I sit here before a stream, I'll look up at it. It's like, you know, those inspirational messages that a baseball club might put on the wall in the clubhouse or something to get them really motivated. Sean Longworth sent a $2... I almost said long balls. Jesus Christ. Sean Longworth sent a $2 super chat. So thank you, Sean. Dry chicken without flavor, $5 super chat. Since the AEW roster is getting huge, in my opinion, they need to put a strong emphasis for more tournaments like New Japan does in AEW. Well, don't forget, we've got the Owen coming up very soon. In fact, probably in about a month and a half. The men's Owen Hart tournament and the women's tournament are going to be starting, and they, of course, will culminate at Double or Nothing, and Martha Hart will be there to present the trophies to the winners. So we're coming up pretty fast, actually, on the start of those two tournaments. It's coming up pretty quick. Old Dirty Sausage. Yeah, Beowulf, that's not a bad idea, actually. Beowulf did a tremendous drawing. I shared it on Twitter. Of me as Bret Hart giving Sean... Oh, Drew, you would love this, by the way. It's an illustration of Bret Hart from WrestleMania 12 with Sean and the Sharpshooter, but it's my head. My head, my face on Bret Hart's body. And then the Sound Off logo in the corner. It came out great. Actually, I should probably look into framing. But Old Dirty Sausage says, honestly, instead of Yuta against Pac and the Jungle Boy match, they could have had Keith Lee and Swerve wrestle on the show tonight, in my opinion. I agree. At least one of them. I agree. I know they want to save some stuff for Rampage. I get that. But you're 100% right. At least one of them, you could have swapped out easily one of those matches on the show and given them some TV time on TBS tonight. Loki 07. $10 super chat. Thank you, Low Key. He says, oh boy. So this one came out in Spanish. I better take a drink first. Let's give this a shot. Imagina que Matt y Andrade pelean en el Hardy compound y Andrade es tirado al lago de la reincarnación y sale como la sombra. Encuentran la puerta prohibida en Hardy compound y Naito sale por detrás. Adios mío. So thank you, Luke. I have no fucking idea what that said. I know the Lake of Reincarnation and Andrade becomes La Sombra. I think that was the point of the super chat. I hope I didn't do a terrible job. I think I'm improving, actually. I think I'm improving. I'm trying to use my Duolingo. I think I'm making progress. Anyway. Putting that college education to good use, right? Tens of thousands of dollars to go to college and take a Spanish course, and that's what you get. Darth Panic with the $6 super chat. If Rosa doesn't win, Solomon Monster must shave his head. Yeah, I'm not agreeing to that. Joseph Brooks, $9.99. Cherish, keep, borrow, and sell on these versions of Sting. So now we're going to get the various versions of Sting here. Surfer Sting, Crow Sting, Wolfpack Sting, and Joker Sting. Notice I didn't include WWE Sting because that would have been the obvious sell. Well, you didn't include AEW Sting either. So I have to cherish, I have to borrow, I have to keep and sell. I'm going to cherish Surfer Sting. I always loved Surfer Sting. So that's me. I'm going to cherish that. I'm going to keep I'll keep Crow Sting. I'm going to borrow Joker Sting, and I'm going to sell Wolfpack Sting, because it always felt wrong to me for Sting to be part of the NWO. I don't care if it was red, white, black. Sting never should have been part of the NWO in any incarnation. So that's the one that I would sell. EJ wants to know, where does Naito fit into any of that Spanish super chat? Probably something with Los Ingobernables would be my guess. But that's just my guess. Keith Noir, $2 super chat. Do you think they are going to book MJF as Vincent Kennedy McMahon? In what way? I mean, I use that analogy. I used the Vince McMahon Mustafa Ali analogy before, but I, beyond that, I don't know what you are referring to. In what way, though? All right, so apparently I didn't completely butcher the translation there. Some of you people are actually proud of me. That makes me happy. Jared M, $25 super chat. What's going on, Jared? He says, good show. An amazing crowd tonight. Except for the Rosa match. That was not an amazing crowd. Germinator, 24. Any relation to the Verminator from Married with Children? Will the LA AEW show sell out on Friday? So that is at the Forum, right? It's at the Forum in LA, I believe, in June. Someone in the chat, tell me really quick, what is the seating capacity for the Forum in LA? And then I can give you a better answer. Anaconda Vice, Solomonster the God, did you see the Batman? No, I have not seen the Batman yet. C Moonsault, $4.99 super chat. Monday Night Raw has not been good for a few years now. It will not improve until Chance McMahon steps down as the lead creative sheriff of the... Chance McMahon? Is that his nephew or something? Who's Chance McMahon? Well, he's not stepping down. If you meant Vince McMahon, he's not stepping down. All right, so I'm being told... Now, that can't be what they're blocking off for the LA show. The people are saying 17,500. So let's say, for a TV taping, let's say they block off part of the building, they set it up for 12,000. Let's just say. Okay, maybe they'll try to sell it out, but if they seat 17,000, let's say they configure it for 12 or 13... I am going to, as far as a one-day sellout, I'm going to say, no. I think they're going to sell a shitload of tickets, but I don't think they'll sell out in one day. I think they will sell out, but I'm going to say no. So we'll see. Boots, $5 super chat. I just ordered Magic Spoon and used the code to get $5 off. I haven't had milk since the early to mid-2000s, so things can get interesting. Well, is that because you can't have milk or because you just have decided not to have milk? Trust me, you don't need to have milk. I can have soy milk and stuff. I have that, but I have this here without milk, and it's perfectly fine. And I'm not one who usually likes dry cereal either. Turtlehead 2, Kenta against Pac, or Punk rather. Kenta against Punk against Sammy in a GTS on a pole match, bro. What say you? Well, I think that triple threat on its own would be fantastic. I think that would be great. Boots, if you have a discount code for beer, hook us up. Well, I don't have a beer sponsor yet, but if anybody wants to reach out and tell them about the Sound Off, I'm all ears. I'm all ears. You get a beer sponsor, a cereal sponsor. Drew Johnson, you can dance if you want to. You can leave your friends behind. Brother Nero. But if we don't dance, there's no friend of mine. We can dance if we want to. Hulkling 93, $10 super chat. What's going on, Hulkling? Hey, Joden in the chat. Yes, Magic Spoon is very good. I wouldn't be telling you about it if it wasn't. You know how many other potential sponsors I say no to or I ignore their emails because I have no interest in using their product? And I just kind of let it slide. You would be amazed at some of the emails I get. What do you think? I just say yes to everything that comes to me? Maybe 10 years ago I would have, but now I at least have the luxury of being able to pick and choose what I talk about here. Let's see here. Hulkling, though, says, my concern is Rose's in for a tough time as champion since Britt, Jade, and Serena are the only heels that feel like viable threats. Jade's TBS champion, and Serena and Sheeta has reignited. That is going to be a bit of an issue. But... again, that's just something they're going to have to deal with because you can't keep the title on Britt Baker forever. At some point, a babyface has to go over. And next week feels like the right time to do it. And look, just because she wins the title next week doesn't mean that we're not going to get Britt Baker against Thunder Rosa again at Double or Nothing. You can get one more match at it. But after that, they're going to have to figure out, you know, who's next in line. You know, is it Jamie Hayter? It's a possibility. I survived the Shaker Heights spike. Sent a $4.99 super chat. Am I the only one who is scared for what MJF is going to cook up promo-wise if or when he faces off against Jeff Hardy one day? Oh, boy. Yeah, he's going to go scorched earth. That's what's going to happen. I wonder what that first confrontation, well, not confrontation, but that first meeting is going to be like behind the scenes with CM Punk and Jeff Hardy. That's interesting. I'm sure it'll be very cordial and everything will be fine, but I know there was bad blood there once upon a time. Maybe now they've put it behind them. I know Jeff was not happy about things Punk said after he left the company in 09, after he put Punk over on the way out. So I'd love to be a fly on the wall for that first conversation. Amiibo Guru. What's going on, Amiibo? Food pun. Yeah, we were doing some wrestler food puns the other week. Candy Cane is his food pun. That's very good. Took you a week to figure that out, did it? Drew Johnson, $5 super chat. Everybody knows that Shawn Michaels, he says, is the GOAT. No need to pretend otherwise. That is what is posted on my wall. Nick Grosso, did you see Scream 5? And if so, what did you think? I did finally see Scream. I saw Scream... when did I see Scream? Was it last weekend? Yeah, last weekend I finally saw it. I liked it. I liked it. Of the Scream movies that I've seen, which was only 1, 2, and 3 before this, so I guess 4 was the only one I didn't see, I would probably put this one... I would put this one maybe after 2. I think I might go 1, 2, 5. And then 3. 4 I can't comment on because I didn't see 4. If I should see 4, then you guys can let me know and I'll try to find time to go watch 4. But I enjoyed it. You know, it's... you know, cheesy. It's... you know. It's like a parody almost of the original, but... I mean, I enjoyed it. Dry chicken without flavor. I sent a $5 super chat. Why did I say it that way? He sent a $5 super chat. I don't know if Martha Hart and the Hart family work things out, but I wonder if Bret Hart will show up at Double or Nothing to watch the Owen Hart Cup. I think he absolutely should. Last I knew that he was not on good terms with Martha, and they didn't speak. Which is very sad because, I mean, that's his niece and nephew, and I assume that means he hasn't seen his niece and nephew either. I don't know if they're on good terms now or not. I would hope that doesn't preclude him from being there if he wants to be there, or if Tony Khan wants to invite him to be there. I think he should. I think he absolutely should. Craving the sweet release of death. I was wondering if you were going to pop up tonight. Victory Road 2022 with both Sting and Jeff. In AEW. Luis Belmont Show Walkthrough sent a $5 super chat. One day you will get an email from Konami so you can sponsor Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Links. By the way, it's a great game. You should play on Steam. Well, I'm not going to, but it's funny you mentioned Konami because I saw the news today, and this actually I will buy, most likely. And I'm actually very excited about this. I saw that Konami is releasing apparently a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. It's like a whole pack of all of the old Turtle games, Turtles in Time, and the original NES one, like all of them. For, I think, all platforms. PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Switch, Steam, Xbox. Sometime in 2022. They didn't announce when exactly. If it's the fall, if it's summer, they didn't say. But if it's on Steam, that means I can buy it. So that got me excited. The Ninja Turtles, that's right, it's called the Cowabunga Collection. It's like 13 games in one, I think, or something. So that's very cool. That is very cool. I saw that trailer actually before Dynamite tonight. I popped up in Twitter and it was like a minute long trailer and I watched it. I'm like, oh man, that brought me back. That brought me back quite a ways. The spiral goes on with the $20 super chat. Miguel says, do I like Modelo? Yeah, I mean, if you put a beer in front of me, I'm going to drink it. I'm not really like a beer guy where I can... I'm not terribly picky when it comes to that because I'm not a big beer guy. You know, if I'm out and I'm in a beer mood, I'll get, you know, whatever everyone else is getting. If it's a bottle, if it's a draft, I can have fucking Amstel Light or I can have Coors Light or I can have, you know, a fucking... duvet or something, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. Actually, those things will fucking knock you for a loop. But, yeah, Modelo is fine. I don't have an issue with Modelo. Or maybe you'll see me in the corner of the bar having a Zima, a nice cold Zima. Maybe one of those. Remember Zima? Or Mike's Hard Lemonade. The spiral goes on. Did you hear Meltzer's take on running Ring of Honor as a separate entity? He said if AEW is going to run its own developmental brand, it makes more sense to just call it AEW because AEW's brand is a much bigger one than Ring of Honor. I disagree. I don't disagree that AEW is a more well-known brand. If Tony Khan wanted to run Ring of Honor as a developmental thing, then who gives a shit? If it's developmental... who cares what you call it? It's developmental. It's not meant to be a brand then that's going to do the kind of business that AEW does. So I don't see any issue keeping the Ring of Honor name. Why are you going to buy Ring of Honor and then change the name? That sounds pretty stupid to me. If I'm understanding what he is saying, and it's possible that something is getting lost in translation here, I think that's very stupid. That really wouldn't make a lot of sense. That's a bad take. Drew Johnson, no stew. That don't work for me, brother. Come on, Drew. No spoilers. Samoan Fan 101, I would like to see Shivani call the Yeti in AEW. And Drew again, Brett doesn't speak to Martha. I thought he was this great guy, HBK Bebe. Yeah, I don't think they've spoken for a while. I think that goes back to some of the lawsuit stuff many years ago. So it's sad. It's sad, but not all families get along. So somebody mentioned Heineken. I drink a Heineken. Yeah, Heineken's fine. Nothing wrong with that. Austin. You've got Stone Cold Austin Rung. Runge, I'm sorry, Runge. Brett is the goat versus Sean is the goat is silly when Brian is the goat and everybody knows it. Well, according to William Regal, he is the perfect professional wrestler. And you know what? I'm willing to bet you that if you ask Bret Hart that question right now, who's the perfect professional wrestler, he'd probably agree. He'd probably say the same thing. That's one of those what-if matches. You take Bret in his prime Bret against, like, current Danielson, Ugh, what a fucking match that would be. What a match that would be, man. Now, if any other ones come in, I will read your super chats. We're not leaving just yet. But before I get into the Be the Booker stuff, I do want to mention this. I will not be live on Friday night. There is no Friday night stream this week, so if you're waiting for a SmackDown and a Rampage stream, you ain't going to get one. And if anything big happens on those shows, I will talk about them on Sunday, episode 747. Because Friday night, House of Glory is live from the NYC Arena and back on Fight TV. You will be able to watch this live if you want to. You'll hear me on commentary. I'll be back on commentary with JD from NY and our partner, the good professor, Hillary P. Wisdom, joining us. And we've got three big matches so far that are signed. Natalia Markova defends the House of Glory Women's Championship that she just won in January, defends it against Taya Valkyrie, making her Hog debut. We've got Low-Ki defending the Crown Jewel Championship against Biff Busick. It was going to be Jonathan Gresham. He had to pull out. And in his place, the former Oney Lorcan, Biff Busick, is coming into House of Glory and challenging for the Crown Jewel title. I suspect that's going to be a very hard-hitting match. So I'm looking forward to calling that one. And in the main event, and this is the one that I am very much looking forward to calling. For the first time ever, the House of Glory Tag Team Champions, the Lucha Brothers, they are back in action. Yes, Rey Fénix. This is going to be Rey Fénix's probably his first match back, I think, since he was injured. The Lucha Brothers against the Briscoe Brothers. What a fucking main event that's going to be. And I get to be on commentary to call it. I'm very fortunate. Very fortunate to be part of that. And so, if you want to watch that main event, you want to hear the Solemn Monster on commentary, all you got to do is go to the Fight TV website, fight.tv, and search for House of Glory. Actually, upper left-hand corner, you'll see the schedule. Click on the schedule for Friday night, 8 p.m., and this is the ordering page. You can pre-order right now. There it is. House of Glory Salvation. Very much looking forward. This is going to be great. This is going to be a hot show, and I hope you join me for it. And now, let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Nier sends in a super chat, and I will get to Nier and Maruthi. I got your $5 super chat. I will get to you guys here in just a second. But first, we gotta be the booker. We've got to book ourselves a pair of main event matches, as we do every week, and I am in the middle of trying to put together a bracket, our own little March Madness, as you can see here. We're going to have one bracket for the men, we're going to have one bracket for the women, including the matches that I have been selecting over the last few weeks, and then I will allow you guys to vote on which matches advance and ultimately which one wins. But first, we got to pick a few more, and so we are going to kick things off. We're going to begin with the men. Let's see what we come up with here. On the men's side, our first pick is the AEW World Champion, the man who retained his title tonight against Dante Martin, Hangman Adam Page. He's going to be defending. Defending the title. Let's say he's defending the AEW title. Who's he defending the AEW World Championship against? The Gobbledygooker. And this just shit the bed. You know, I had a lot of enthusiasm in my voice. I thought this was going down a good road. I said, man, we got the AEW World Champion, Hangman Page. Just beat Adam Cole in the main event of that great pay-per-view the other night. And then I picked the Gobbledygooker. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I allowed my enthusiasm to get the better of me there. Well, let's move on. Boy, I would be a terrible booker, wouldn't I? Some of these matches that I've been picking. Let's see on the women's side if we have better luck. I usually have horrible luck here with these, but we'll start with Jesus Christ. It's the narcoleptic girl, Wendy Chu. Wendy Chu, why even bother at this point? Why even go on? We're booking a tournament here, so I have to go on. I must pick an opponent for this woman. If she can stay awake long enough to actually wrestle the match. She's not facing Kane. She's not facing Kane. It's Tori. Tombstone Tori. Initially I thought it was Kane. But it is Tombstone Tori against Wendy Chu. What is wrong with me? How do I get Wendy Chu and the gobbledygooker in the same night? It's like winning the reverse lottery. It's like winning the lottery and owing money instead of winning money. How does that happen? Well, anyway. That completes tonight's edition of Be the Booker. Seriously, how does that happen? How do I get those two, Gobbledygooker and Wendy Chu, on the same night? I don't get it. We can't redo it. No, the rules are the rules. We're doing it. We're booking a tournament here. We have to go with what we go with. Those matches are going to make it into the bracket. It's the way it is. So again, there won't be a Be the Booker on Friday night. So the next time I'm live, which may not be until next Wednesday, the next time I'm live, we'll add a couple more matches. I can't believe that. I can't believe that just happened. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go back to your super chats here. Let's pick up with your questions. Maruthi Ram with the $5 super chat. William Regal coming to AEW was so awesome. I'm excited to see his face-off or story angle with either Kenny Omega, Hangman, or Eddie Kingston. Or the gobbledygook. Chris says Wendy Chu against Kane is my pick so far. Maybe I should just put Kane in that bracket. Nier, thoughts on Ziggler winning the NXT title? I will talk about NXT on the podcast on Sunday, but if you listened to 746 this past weekend, this should be no surprise. That was another one of my predictions. I'm on a roll, man. Between that and Revolution, I'm on a roll. But to give you the Cliff Notes version, I know why they did it. I personally don't have an issue with it because he's not going to be holding that title for very long. Darth Panic with the $3. Thank you, Darth. Unpopular opinion, he says. Mike Tenay should replace Jim Ross. I don't know how unpopular that would be at this point, to be honest with you. I think there was a moment actually on the show tonight where Jim Ross briefly forgot John Moxley's name. And at Revolution, when the pay-per-view started, he forgot the name of the city that they were in. So I don't think it would be a very unpopular opinion to replace Jim Ross on commentary. Groovy Goose. I'll take out Gooker. Don't worry, Solomon. Aha, Groovy Goose is going to take out the Gooker. Well, there you go. See, that's a match I can get behind. Yeah, Tanay is retired. Tanay is retired. I think they had him on Observer Radio. Meltzer had him on. He doesn't do very many interviews or anything these days, but he had him on recently. Somebody passed away. I don't remember who it was, but he had Tanay on to talk about that person. But Tanay is, I think he's still living out in Vegas, and he's, he's retired. Is Santina in the women's GIF? Yes. Yes. Let's see here. We have... Yes, yeah, I didn't forget them. I didn't forget them. Samoan Fan with the $2. Sound Off 747. Mask of the... He says, or sorry. Mask of the Orgasm. Yes, I misspoke last week. You don't have to rub it in my face. And K Freakin' Aaron, a.k.a. Dr. Scorpio, sent a super chat in. Buy or sell WrestleMania 21, Eddie against Rey or Angle against HBK? Oh, it's not, come on. It's not even a contest. That's not even the best Eddie and Rey match they ever had. Kurt Angle against Shawn Michaels is one of the greatest WWE matches of all time. First match. The WrestleMania match. A match that Bobby Heenan himself, after he watched it, said was the greatest match that he had ever seen. Think about the career that Bobby Heenan had, the matches that he himself was part of, the people he managed. For him to say that about those two guys that night is the highest of praise. And he said it for a reason, because it was a fucking awesome match. So I am buying, I can't even buy as hard as I can possibly buy. I'm buying on Kurt Angle against Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 20. Drew Johnson with the $5 super chat. Brett would say, my only regret is not being able to be as good as HBK. He was the GOAT. Brett was the GOAT. Absolutely. I agree. Finally, we agree on something. Griga. Griga with the $2. Wrestling Empire is a fun wrestling game on Steam. I have not heard of that one. I did get Fire Pro Wrestling a few years ago. I did a couple of Sound of Gamer videos with that. Maruthi Ram with the $2. Can Ziggler be counted as a Grand Slam champion? I mean, why not? He was already a World Heavyweight Champion, right? He's been United States Champion. He's been Tag Team Champion. Am I missing something? He wasn't Intercontinental, I don't think, right? I don't believe he was. Probably not. I mean, if you're looking at four different titles, then probably not. Because we would be focused on main roster only. I thought he was Intercontinental, but I don't think so. I think it was just the world title and the US title, right? And then all the tag belts that he had. Hulkling 93. He was IC champion. Okay, yeah, why did I think he wasn't for some reason? So then, yeah, he would be a Grand Slam winner. Yeah. Hulkling, last week you talked about Robin Williams. I feel Foley is the Robin Williams of wrestling. Foley can be fun-loving, vulnerable, and menacing. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good comparison. Both legendary performers at their craft. Dry Chicken, pick one member of Jericho's new faction to be the designated driver while you and others drink. I don't know. Daniel Garcia strikes me as maybe the kind of the straight edge type. No, just the hunch I have. He probably would be the designated driver. And Drew Johnson says, Shawn Michaels against anyone is their greatest match. I vaguely recall there being a Shawn Michaels Great Khali match that really wasn't all that good. So I don't think you can say that. But there you go. I think we are all caught up on your messages now. I do believe that we are all caught up. Do yourself and me a favor. Subscribe to the channel. Hit the bell for all notifications. And that way you will always be aware when I post new content, when I go live. So make sure you do that. Do hit that like button as well before you head on out. I do appreciate all of your support each and every week. I will not be live on Friday night. Again, one last reminder. I will be on Fight TV and I hope you will join. You can go and pre-order the event right now. House of Glory Salvation, the Lucha Bros and the Briscoes. I haven't heard any differently, so I assume the match is still on and Rey Fénix is ready to go, but, well, you never know. But that is the main event on Friday night. Hopefully he's all healed up and ready to go. I am going to have another jam-packed podcast for you on Sunday, episode 747. We're going to be talking about Vader going into the Hall of Fame and some other rumors, some other rumored names that might be going into the Hall of Fame this year, WrestleMania weekend, along with The Undertaker and a possible change in the format of the Hall of Fame. So we'll talk about that and all the top news of the week. Monday Night Raw, I have a lot of thoughts on that. And Stone Cold Steve Austin, Edge's promo from Monday night, which I've been a big fan of Edge's work on the mic recently, and this was not one of those weeks. But we'll talk about why on the podcast on Sunday. We got a couple of late super chats coming in here. We got three of them. Look at this, the hat trick. You guys are awesome. You guys are keeping me around here. King Bling Blah, what does AEW have to do to raise ratings above 2.0? 2.0? They're never going to have ratings of a 2.0. You mean 2 million or that's not going to happen. Wrestling just isn't hot right now. It's not hot enough. And this goes with WWE too. Because WWE, obviously, their numbers are a lot bigger, but Raw has fallen into a pattern now where, and there's no football. Football's over. And they still can't crack 2 million viewers for Monday Night Raw. They have officially settled below 2 million. It used to be that sometimes they would fall below 2 million. Now they're always below 2 million. When they hit 1.7 and 1.8, it's like they're doing cartwheels in Titan Tower. The numbers have consistently gone down. Wrestling is not as hot as some people would like for you to believe that it is. So AEW doesn't need to be focused on getting a 2.0, because that's not going to happen. I think if they can just keep themselves consistently above a million and then just slowly try to build interest in their product over time, they're still signing new people. Once they have this core nucleus of people that they're going to focus on and they're done with all the big free agent signings and everything, and they try to fit all the pieces where they belong, then they will hopefully try to, you know, build a larger audience and hope that over time more people will start watching, especially as they get closer to when their television deal is going to be up for renewal. But to throw these arbitrary numbers out there, when are they going to get a 2.0? They're not. They're not going to. Does that make them a failure? No. But I think we need to be realistic in general about AEW and WWE, or if there's a Ring of Honor relaunch or anything like that, wrestling is not as popular as it used to be. And there is no great big star on the horizon who's going to change that I see. So that's just the reality of it. It's not as hot as it used to be. Drew says, Shawn Michaels gave the best match in company history against The Undertaker, Bad Blood 97. What about Undertaker at WrestleMania 25? Why are you going to ignore that match? Dried Chicken, the new AEW Women's World title belt is beautiful. That's why I have it on the screen right now. That is indeed what you see there, the new AEW World Women's Championship, which is a big improvement over the title before. It's like, basically, it's a smaller version of the men's world title. It's a slightly smaller version of the men's belt. But I think it looks great. A lot of people believing that Hook will get them to the promised land, ratings-wise. Putting all their faith in Hook, huh? Well, he's not there yet. He's not completely polished just yet. He's just getting started. He's just starting his career. Got to give the kid time. Gavin says the first Hell in a Cell is his favorite Hell in a Cell. That's mine too. First Hell in a Cell match in 97 is still the greatest of all the Hell in a Cell matches they've ever done. Yeah, the new belt for a new champion. Thunder Rosa. I'm telling you, 100% guarantee market down. Thunder Rosa will be the champion in San Antonio next week, and Wardlow will get fucked out of the TNT title. Drew Johnson, Bad Blood 97. Changed my life as a kid. Such an amazing main event. It was. It was a fantastic match. You know, the new cage, escaping the cage, Michaels wearing the crimson mask, brawling on top of this giant cage, right down to Kane finally making his debut after all those months, the flames shooting up behind him as he walked down the aisle, ripping the door off its hinges. You know, the pyro going off as he raised his hands up, even though one of the corners, unfortunately, if you go back, a little bit of a botch. The pyro didn't go off in one corner like it was supposed to, but that's okay. See, I notice these little things now when I go back and watch. But also, Paul Bearer, after Kane was getting ready to walk out of the cell, Paul Bearer threw some kind of like water or liquid or something on the referee. I never really knew what that was about. But that was it was an epic match. I mean, there's no doubt about it. There's a reason why that match has stood the test of time. Everything about it was just fantastic. What was the name of the match with the three cages on top of one another? Would you want another one of those if done properly in AEW? No, I'm not really a fan of that stuff. That was the triple cage they used in WCW. What do they call that? Oh, they had a name for it. That was the one that David Arquette was in. I think that was the match where Chris Kanyon got thrown off and he took this stunt bump through the ramp. I forgot what they call it. The King of the Mountain? Is that what it was? Was it the King of the Mountain match? It might have been the King of the Mountain match. Yeah, at least the ring post pyro didn't go off in Undertaker's face. Yeah, that happened to him the following year. I was at that Raw. That was the very first Monday Night Raw I ever went to live. And I almost watched The Undertaker get his face burned off. It was the opening match that night against Vader. And he's standing there in the corner on the ring steps and he raises his arms. And in that exact corner, the fucking flame shot up. I mean, I was scared shitless when I saw that. That was a scary moment. Undertaker has had some unfortunate experiences with the pyro. The pyro people in WWE. King of the Mountain was TNA. Then what did they call that? Did they not give it a name in WCW? Because I know they did at least one in WCW, and Arquette was in it, and the Canyon Bump. I thought they gave that match a name, other than just Triple Cage, but I guess maybe not. Maybe not. Hogan and Macho Man against the Alliance to end Hulkamania. I remember that. You got to go back. All of my This Week in History segments are archived in a playlist on this channel. And look up whatever pay-per-view that was. It was probably March or April of 95, right? 95 or 96. And so you can probably find the segment. I covered that entire clusterfuck in extensive detail in one of my This Week in History segments. You know, right down to them bringing in Zeus and Jeep Swenson. And they gave Jeep Swenson like a Nazi, like the name of Hitler's plan to exterminate the Jews. And they called him the Final Solution. And nobody thought anything of this. And then when they got called out on it, they changed his name to like the Ultimate Solution or something. Everything about that angle was just completely ridiculous. And actually, I do want to say that was 96 because, as I recall, Brian Pillman was supposed to be part of that. And Brian Pillman scheduled, I think it might have been one of his many throat surgeries around that time and wanted no part of it because he knew Hogan wanted to squash him. And Pillman was not going to be squashed by Hogan. So he wisely found a way to kind of worm his way out of it. So maybe it probably was 96 now that I think about it. What a ridiculous match that was. Hogan and Savage, they beat like 8 guys. It was just completely ridiculous. And Drew Johnson, my first Monday Night Raw was the night the New Age Outlaws came out as the champion. Shawn Michaels came out in a wheelchair doing a gimmick for the Ken Shamrock feud. So that would have been the end of 97. That would have been right after Montreal. No, Juan, I think what you're thinking of, you're thinking of a different match. If you're thinking of the match where Savage really wrecked his knees, there was a cage match. And this cage looked like, I mean, it was made of like popsicle sticks. I can't believe this cage even stayed together. It was so cheaply constructed, it looked like. But it was a cage match, I think, with Hogan and Piper, or Hogan and Flair. I think it was Hogan and Piper. It might have been that whole age in a cage thing. Savage climbed to the top of this thing. Now, this thing is a rickety thing. It doesn't look very stable at all. It's very, very tall. And Savage is in his 40s at this point in his career, and he climbs to the top of this fucking thing, and he jumps off to do a double axe handle. And he destroyed his knees. And I think he continued to wrestle for months after that until finally he had to go away and have surgery. I think he had double knee surgery. To this day, I have no idea how or why he took that bump. That was one of the stupidest decisions that I have ever seen someone make. So it's no surprise that Savage had knee problems. He really did himself in with that one. Yeah, that's right, Jared. Halloween Havoc. That was the one I think we're on Raw the next night. Jim Cornette did one of his little pre-taped WCW rants and called it Age in a Cage, I think. Anyway, this has been fun. We've gone 2 hours and 40 minutes, so I should probably get the hell out of here. Thank you again for all your support. Very enjoyable episode of Dynamite tonight. I'll be back with you live next Wednesday. No stream this Friday. And of course, don't forget to check out 747 on Sunday, and do support our sponsor, Magic Spoon, because when you do, you help out the channel, you help out all the streams, and you're going to get yourself some good cereals, some good cereal bars. In fact, I'm going to go finish the one that I just opened before I go to bed. This will be my little midnight snack. So until this weekend, be well, stay safe, and I'll see you guys back here on the channel real soon. Take care, guys.